Today, Monocle's editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, gives us his top five print lessons for 2019. Plus, we speak to the editor of a publication with an appeal tailored specifically to the oldies amongst us. And also, Nin, a Brazilian erotic art magazine. Stay tuned for what's sure to be a steamy edition of The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. Coming up on the show, we have the editor of The Oldie joining us to talk about the magazine's Oldie of the Year awards. I wonder if I'm in contention. And a Brazilian title dealing with all things related to sexuality. But first, let's hear from Monocle's editor-in-chief and chairman, Tyler Brulé, who was back in London this past week. I sat down with him here in the studio to ask him about what he's expecting for the world of print in 2019. Tyler, you're back in London. You've been exceptionally busy.
Of course.
And, well, I thought it'd be nice to
Didn't see you in Zurich, didn't see you in LA, seen you in Paris,
I've not been avoiding you. But I would love to get a quick sort of holiday season, New Year, recap of Newsstand.
Yes, Beb.
In terms of, we know some of your regular haunts around that time of year, whether it's in Murano or in St. Moritz. But as you mentioned, you've been on the West Coast, you've been in Paris as well. What's the general sense? I mean, we spoke about a great deal of optimism looking into 2019 from the end of last year. Has that been borne out by what you've seen?
Or have I been beaten down already within the first 4 weeks of the year? If I have my top five for 2019, and I don't want to start on a negative note, but I do have this fear, Tom, we've talked about it many times on this program, but there is a real crisis at the newsstand. I was heading back to Zurich from San Francisco Airport, and I saw this new concept, this new outfit which presented itself as a newsstand. But of course, as ever, there were plenty of you know, big thermoses to drink 5 liters of coffee. I don't know why you'd want to have 5 liters of coffee on the plane, but anyway. And of course, neck pillows and all the things and all the tat that you get at airports. And then there was the news section, and it was, I think it was 16 titles. There's 16 boxes which were there for magazines. And because it was a nicely designed shop. And so you think, okay, is this going to be upheld as a new vision for what a newsstand needs to look like? Which was mostly, you know, the likes of People and quite popular magazines. I think they did have The New Yorker there. But it was just, this is awful. And this is, in many ways, the direction that the news trade is heading. So I think we need to, and I think there will be a positive component to this, but we're reaching a critical point right now where people do want to read. They do want to read off page, but it's becoming increasingly difficult to find a great selection of news. I think, you know, one of the problems, certainly in this country and many airports elsewhere, there are major chains which we know them as places to go and buy print, but you know, they're more focused on Coke Zero and selling Toblerones and Kit Kats and whatever your choice is in chocolate. I think there's a great layer of travelers, interested readers who just think, I don't want to go in there. This is not an environment that I want to spend time in. So I do feel we have a crisis on the newsstand. And it's a newsstand issue. It's not that people don't want to read magazines. I think the second thing, when we look around, I think, you know, the market right now, there's a positive sign. We always talk very positively of Germany. I see a lot of interesting things still happening in the German market. We have a France special coming up, which we're finishing. So we talk about, of course, intellectual leadership. We talk about brand leadership. We talk about the notion of premium. And I think we really have to look to both France and Germany as countries which still launch magazines, and not just on a niche level. Of course, on this program, we're always presenting, you know, titles up and down the scale, but the big publishers are still interested in bringing out great titles. Shall I give you my other three?
Please do.
The other three things that I think are interesting this year, we're going to come to something in a moment. There is, of course, there's a shakedown happening when we talk about being up and down the scale. And I think that's going to present opportunities. You know, you see, of course, some big publishers are blinking, have blinked. And what does that mean? And I think that actually does throw up a little bit of opportunity for the marketplace. Sitting again in this country, I think Brexit is going to be very interesting to watch how that plays out for media companies and not just print. We've just made an interesting announcement. So I think maybe this is the first time people will be hearing it around this microphone. We're moving all of our print operations to Germany. So this all remains, but we are taking all of our print out of the southwest of the UK and moving to a very good facility outside of Hamburg. And partly that is, well, a huge part of it is, of course, is Brexit and the logistic challenges that come with it. But I think also the readers will notice that it is going to be a vastly improved magazine as well, because also we're moving to a printer which is invested in print. They've got amazing new machines. And so that's exciting. And I think that that's going to offer a bit of shake-up in terms of quality and maybe where people are based. I mean, we're even hearing that the likes of the BBC, Tom, are thinking that, you know, should they be putting some offices, some divisions, especially for IP reasons, outside of the UK. On my last point, I think this is an exciting thing. I had a very interesting meeting with the people from Piaggio. I don't know if you've ever sort of spun around London on two wheels.
I mean, yeah, I prefer four wheels.
Three wheels? An Ape. We're thinking of a Ape newsstand. Of course, you know, people are not familiar with the Ape. That's that little Piaggio three-wheeler that, of course, you often see driving through the Tuscan countryside or Puglia or whatever with a Nona at the wheel. And we're thinking, how about we have a nice little Ape with maybe a coffee setup and of course a great newsstand that just sort of, you know, totters along the Mediterranean for the summer. What you up to in July?
I'll give that a go. You can imagine, no? My shorts, my flip-flops on.
Absolutely.
Jumping aboard. Lovely stuff. Well, we shall await that with a great deal of interest. I wanted to pick your brain, Tyler, while you're here about another story. And I guess this speaks to this bigger media picture about the old balancing act between print and digital, if indeed it is one that publishers should even be thinking about attempting to strike. And that was an announcement out of Condé Nast International's, that specific division, about this Vogue Business digital only. It came out of their in-house hub of some sort. Lots of exciting sort of rhetoric around the announcement, but I wonder, is there a question there about adhering to a brand or coming from a position of coherence? What did you make of it?
I think it's an interesting let's call it a curious move, because the Vogue Business brand has existed in one form or another for some time. We've seen it in Germany as this sort of spin-off title, so it's had a print life. And now it's clear that Vogue sees an opportunity to, of course, be in their territory, and that is the world of fashion, accessories, and luxury, and to use their voice of authority. Well, I would say they've had that chance. They had that chance. They acquired, or certainly Condé Nast acquired, Women's Wear Daily. They spun Women's Wear Daily off. So if they wanted to have that trade voice, if they're feeling a bit twitchy because business of fashion has done so well and they want to, you know, weigh in this territory, I think that ship has sailed for them. The other big component, and Andrew Tuck, our editor, we were chatting about this, and Andrew made a really good point. He said, the other thing is, you know, Vogue, because they're so heavily reliant on advertising, because they generally have to be quite nice to the brands that fill the front of the magazine or the outside back cover, they can't go to town in quite the same way that a business of fashion can. And obviously, vastly, vastly different business models. Is there room, Tom, for Vogue to say that Vogue Business is an entrepreneur's magazine for women? Is it there to encourage startup culture, whether you want to launch a fashion app or whether you want to launch your own sandal collection? That's a possibility. I think that there could be scope to do that, or in a very broad sense, is it just a women's, you know, focused title, which is looking at entrepreneurship in general? Maybe, but that's not what I'm reading. I think when I've looked at sort of the releases and what we know about the title so far, that doesn't seem to be quite where they're heading. And again, you have to sustain it. You know, I think even if Vogue was going to go down that route, you know, would you want to build it up as a column within your existing franchise rather than saying this is going to be a spin-off, albeit digital? You know, do you want to be in that game day in, day out? And I think then, you know, if I'm a woman, I'm a serious entrepreneur, well, yeah, I'm getting my morning news from Bloomberg and lots of other very, very focused niche sources and trades for that. I'm not sure I need the Vogue brand for it.
That was Tyler Brûlé, Monocle's editor-in-chief and chairman, talking to me a little earlier this week here in London. Now, the distinguished and slightly cheeky title, The Oldie, caters for an audience that's often ignored in the world of magazines. Every year, they also host their own awards show, the Oldie of the Year Award, celebrating incredible figures, such as this year, the 90-year-old Lionel Blair. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to the Oldie's editor, Harry Mount, about the awards and the latest issue, celebrating all the winners.
They were held, the awards, on Tuesday, this Tuesday, in Simpsons in the Strand, lovely Victorian restaurant. And they were set up in 2001 by the founder editor of the Oldie, the great Richard Ingrams, who also course, edited Private Eye for 23 years. And they're there to reward older people. I must stress that the magazine is for people of all ages, despite its name. But the awards are very much to celebrate older people, but not just for being old. Alan Bennett famously said that in Britain, if you reach the age of 90, you can eat your own egg. You're a hero. But actually, it's for people who are reaching later life but are still doing extraordinary things. So our winner is the great Lionel Blair, who, for your international listeners, you may not have heard of him, but he's just turned 90, and he's an extraordinary figure for people like me, born in the 70s. I was brought up on him being on every single panel show going. I didn't realise then that he's an extremely distinguished choreographer who'd worked with Fred Astaire and had been dancing ever since the war, when he used to dance with his sister. Just like Fred Astaire, he had a dancing sister. They would dance on the underground to entertain people who are sheltering from the bombs. So he's been in business, or show business, for 75 years, and he's still appearing on television, on the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, and constantly on chat shows. And so it's about people who, in Richard Ingram's terms, still have snap in their celery.
That's perfect. And he's on the cover of the latest issue as well.
He's on the cover, yeah.
But I love the other award winners. And one thing that I like about the Odie, there's a cheeky side to it as well. You know, it seems to me that you guys don't take yourself too seriously, which is a great thing.
That's a crucial part of the outlook, which actually, by accident, has become much more crucial in the last couple of years. I don't know what you think, but I think we are more censored informally than at any time in my lifetime. I'm 47, because of various different movements. And actually, in the oldie, we celebrate the right to offend people while being funny, and not gratuitously. But you should be able to say things that are funny. And if you offend a few people on the way, I don't think that matters so much. And older people are much less easily offended. We have these literary lunches once a month as well with the oldie, and we have some really quite outspoken speakers who say some quite extraordinary things. And I've never in my 2 years in the job ever had anyone complain about being offended. I've had people complain about the noise or the volume levels not being loud enough, but never about being offended.
No, Harry, I agree. I just came back actually from a holiday in my home country. Talking to my grandmas, for example, It feels so much more liberating than talking to some of my friends. It is very interesting what you've discussed. And I think as an editor, you probably also have to keep the balance, because, you know, today, I mean, even if there's an article in the Odie, I'm sure say, oh, this author wrote in the Odie and it's quite controversial.
Yeah.
So I guess you also have to create like a little balance.
No, you're right. I'm not completely free. Mm. And there are sometimes I suddenly wake up in the middle of the night when we've gone to press and I go, oh, God, you really can't say that anymore. Wouldn't bother me so much in my job, but somebody might suddenly become part of a Twitter storm. And as we know from so many people, they're sort of destroyed.
Well, let's talk about some of the other winners. For example, I love the story of Lady Avon, the Odie who has seen it all before and worse. Well, I mean, she's someone who used to hang out with Winston Churchill, Evelyn Ward, and much more as well.
Well, she's utterly extraordinary. She's 98, and to those of your listeners who haven't heard of Lady Avon, she is the widow of Anthony Eden, who was the Prime Minister of Britain in 1956 during the Suez Crisis. And Eden, who is a lot older than her, died in 1977, but she's still alive and extremely spry. Having said that, sadly, she couldn't make the awards. She's suddenly taken ill, but she was going to come. So here is somebody who has seen absolutely everything and everybody. She knew Khrushchev and Macmillan well. She talks, she's interviewed by Hugo Vickers in this new issue. She talks about the Suez Crisis in 1956. And the reason why we awarded her the prize is not just because of her distinguished life, but also during this very, very difficult time over Brexit. It's good to have a reminder that we've been through worse times. And so the oldie is definitely not a nostalgia magazine, but it's there to show how much the past can shed a light on today. One of our other winners was somebody who very few people have heard of, but everyone, you would have seen her artwork this morning. All your listeners in Britain would have seen her artwork this morning. She's called Margaret Calvert. Listeners are still thinking, who the bloody hell is that? And she designed, almost 60 years ago, all the road signs in Britain. And that white-on-blue motorway font, that was invented by her. So here is a woman now in her early 80s, but her creation is around us today the whole time. And I think that's part of what the oldie celebrates, the past within the modern.
And Harry, you mentioned this before. Of course, it's a magazine for all ages. And I have to agree. I mean, you know, when I read, you know, I do buy the ODs time to time. For example, I love this, your, I think, story you wrote, The King of the Dorset Fossil Hunters. I mean, those are kind of stories, let's be honest. I mean, all sorts of ages would be interested in that as well.
Well, he is an extraordinary man. He's a man called Charlie Newman, who left school when he was 15. And he's a pub landlord in Dorset, wonderful pub called the Square and Compass on the Purbeck coast in Dorset. And his father was an amateur fossil hunter and took him out looking for fossils when he was a child. And now he was a world-recognized fossil finder. And in fact, the man's earliest ancestor was discovered a few years ago. And it was named after Charlie Newman, this pub landlord, because he had helped to found specimens of this little creature, which is like a tiny rat. And it's called the Dulstotherium newmani, newmani as in Charlie Newman. And it's man's earliest ancestor, 145 million years old. And it was given the name because he'd done so much to help to find specimens. And so I think anyone of any age with any curiosity would be interested in this figure who took me and two friends across a rain-lashed, sea-lashed coast finding fossils. And it is extraordinary, that coast. With a few tips from him, I found an incredible ammonite, 145 million years old. It even had its own kind of flat stand on it. And I rushed up to him and I said, Charlie, this must be an extraordinary find. And he went, yeah, you can make a clock out of that.
That's amazing. Yeah. No, I love that story. Another curiosity I have about the ODs is about the advertising scene. Of course, It does feel different. Of course, you are catering as well for, you know, some older people. So There's a lot of kind of cruise ads and, you know, I love this one. Wanted, do you have a story? Documentary Film Company seeks interesting real-life stories to bring to the screen, which is so interesting because sometimes even my neighbour, I mean, she's 85, and The stories you tell me, I'm like, I should be recording this.
Oh, yes. Well, there is this massive market for older people, as so much of the media advertising market goes online. The print ads in the oldie do very well, and there's a very good point made by the late Aubram Waugh, the terrific satirical journalist who would have been 80 this year. Sadly, he died almost 20 years ago. And when the oldie was set up by Richard Ingrams in 1992, helped by Aubram Waugh and others, Aubram Waugh in the first issue wrote an article saying, just like today, advertisers, manufacturers, TV companies, not Monocle Radio, but lots of radio companies, are falling over themselves to appeal to the young. Now, there's nothing wrong in doing that, but they shouldn't do that at the expense of the old, of which there are many more in this country. And also, they've got all the money. So to appeal to older people with ads like the ones you've been referring to makes sense, and you can still make money out of print ads with an older population as well.
And finally, Harry, how are you feeling for 2019 in terms of the world of print? I mean, are you feeling optimistic? You can talk even about your own title.
Sure.
What are your predictions?
Sure. Well, I am optimistic. I used to work in newspapers for a long time. I was on the Daily Telegraph and the Standard and the Mail. And they've been having a very, very rough time. And I think it's going to get rougher for them. But for, I would say this, wouldn't I? But for good magazines with proper reads in them, they're doing very well. We're up a very small bit over the last year. But magazines like The Oldie, Private Eye, Spectator, smaller magazines like Prospect and Literary Review are doing incredibly well. And I think the prediction of the death of the print has been wildly exaggerated. People still want to read. They may want to read in digital format, that's fine, but they still want to read interesting, amusing, well-written pieces. So I'm very optimistic for 2019 and beyond.
Harry Mount, the editor of The Oldie, talking to Fernando earlier, and the latest issue of The Oldie is out now. Finally on the programme, let's talk about Neen, a Brazilian erotic art magazine founded by Alice Galeffi and Letícia Gicovati. The bilingual title discusses body, nudity, sexuality, and it also looks beautiful on every page. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco caught up with Alice and Letícia about how the magazine was conceived and indeed perceived when it first came out.
So Neen is because our biggest inspiration comes from Anaïs Nin, the French writer, which was one of the first women to write about eroticism and sexuality. And I think she was never recognized as she should. She was always seen like a minor writer, what's absurd. And we want to somehow bring attention to women writing, living, and thinking about racism, you know, nowadays. So, yeah, this is an honor to Anaïs' name.
Tell me, when did it started? I mean, did you knew each other and then you decided to do a magazine? Tell us about the project.
We didn't know each other, but I published Letícia's sister's book. I have a publishing company called Guarda-Chuva. We met through friends and her sister. Letícia came to a meeting at the publishing company full of magazines and lots of ideas. And I was like, wow, I love you. Let's do this. She wanted to do a magazine. And I was like, yeah, I really want to do a magazine as well. Let's do this. And she had so many references and I instantly fell in love. We started doing lots of meetings and thinking how we could do this.
It was also a love story between us because we became like really big friends in the process of making the magazine because we were like quite very connected with the same ideas and interests and the will to make a good publication with issues and subjects that we wanted to know and read and see.
And this type of publication, I think, is fairly unique worldwide, and especially in Brazil. So how did you think this title was going to be received when you published that?
Well, in general, the whole magazine, we thought no one would read it. Or we even, like, did everything after work. We went to my house and worked on the magazine because we thought it wasn't, like, work. We only published 650 in the first issue. And when we saw in a week, we had none left. So we had to reprint. And it was really surprising for us to see how people wanted to read, even though it's an English name. Many people, Letícia can talk more about it. They don't know what name means or where it comes from. I don't know. We were really surprised of how people enjoyed it. And they wanted a second one and they wanted a third one and we kept doing it.
Actually, I think that we were a bit naive as well because we thought that people would deal with nudity and sexuality in a more open way, even though everybody thinks that Brazil is quite an open place. We can say that Brazilians are a bit conservative. So people wanted to read the magazine and to see the magazine, but in the first moment it was hard. Some places didn't want to sell the magazine because it was an erotic art publication. Yes, the space is open for us and the second issue was much easier to sell and to distribute in Brazil because people really wanted to see what we were producing, like.
And Letícia, it's funny that you mention about Brazilians, they can be quite conservative because people, I'm sure in the world, they say, oh, it's an erotic art magazine. I'm sure nobody will blink an eye in Brazil about that. But actually, it is true. At the same time, that is quite a sexual country in many ways. You know, if they see like nudity in such a magazine that actually doesn't, you know, is not Playboy, is not G Magazine. Do you know what I mean? So I can see how it comes as a surprise to some people.
Yes, everybody has this idea of Brazil about carnival and naked people on the streets. It's not the reality. I mean, it's very impressive. Not everybody knows, but you cannot do topless on the beaches in Brazil. So it's like very contradictory. We wanted to bring this, the naturality of the nudity, you know, to show sexuality as a normal and natural thing. And we thought that it could educate somehow people in Brazil, you know, and to show that you can live a sexual life and you can like nudity and sex, you know, and be a mom and be a parent and have a normal life as we are, as we do, you know.
And it's funny because at the publishing company, I also publish child's books. And so the Instagram has some neen pictures and children's books. And people get really confused because you're not supposed to have them both in the same place. But I'm like, I have a kid. I want to see children's books. I want to see nudity. Like, how do we function being this woman, you know? So it's an interesting place to have this dialogue and just talk openly about sex because no one ever talked to me about it when I was growing up, even though my parents are super open in general.
It's funny what you said about this mixture, kind of, that you also publish children's book, because you have the main photo shoot here in the latest issue. with Brazilian actress Débora Nascimento, and she said, you know, to give birth, it's part of a sexual act as well. So that's an interesting quote. Great cover, by the way. Can you tell us a bit more about the design and how did you meet Débora Nascimento?
Actually, she came to us because she was a fan of the magazine, and then she made this beautiful editorial. She was pregnant in the first months of the pregnancy. The photographer came to us saying that she had this photo shooting with Débora and that she loved Nin, but it wasn't very in the beginning of the pregnancy. And then we decided to do it later when she was like 8 months. And then we did the photo shooting exclusively. She did it for us. You know, it was an honor because she's like a great actor and brilliant woman. And she shows everything that we want to show as to our readers about being a woman, a mom, about having a life and being sexual and having other interests and living the sexuality in a natural way, you know, as we all should live.
Yeah, I think. I was really impressed with her and how she had such similar ideas. And the whole thing about giving birth and being sexual, because it's an act of life, death, all together. So people are really scared about it and they don't talk much about it as well. So to break those boundaries and talk about it and encourage women to just be normal and not have great expectations.
And it was also a process for the two of us, because when we started the first issue of Nin, we wanted to talk about beauty and about the beauty of each body, to show some things that people think that might may be odd or ugly or disturbing, and we wanted to show how beauty it is, because it's natural, it's our real bodies, and to talk about sexuality in an open way. And then the second issue, I can say that it was like we were having like our teenager moment, you know, we wanted shock and we wanted to talk about fluid gender and we wanted to talk about things that were in top of the conversations by the time in 2016. And the third one, both of us are more mature. I'm a mother. Alice became a mother in the middle of the process. And then I can say that Nin grew up as we did. We did it together, you know.
How do you guys work together these days? Because one of you is in Lisbon and the other is in Nottingham in the UK. So do you speak a lot online or do you meet? For example, you're both in London now. So you kind of enjoy this moment to perhaps think about the next issue or what you're going to do next, right?
The third issue we did, as we were saying, on the phone, mm-hmm. being moms, breastfeeding, and talking about
cooking the lunch. And it was fun.
It was. It was stressful, but it worked.
It's our favorite thing.
We should, like, have
my favorite.
Let's have a trip. Like, let's go to Italy or something. We can spend a month and do the fourth
Drink
issue.
Drink a lot of wine.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
I think it will be the best issue.
Right. Cool. It's decided. We know about the stories. The next.
The escapist issue.
Yes. The travel issue, like many magazines do. What about for the listeners of the Stack that they might be curious about the magazine? Where are you guys selling, or when? How can they get in touch? Because, you know, I know I was in São Paulo recently. There's a few places there. You have one place here in London. Tell us a bit more about how to find Nin.
In Brazil, we are in all the main bookstores. And here, we start in the distribution. Letícia is doing a really good job in the UK.
You can find in Berlin at Husa Wolf Shop. In Paris at OFR. It's like a very good place. We're here in Soho at the Good News, in Nottingham with my friend Alex and Ideas on Paper. And we are having good conversations about having a big distribution here in London and in UK. And Portugal in Lisbon.
Under the Cover Shop.
That was Alice Scaleffi and Letícia Gigovati from Nin talking to Fernando earlier. You can find out more on their Instagram page, Nin Magazine. And that's it for this week's programme. Thanks, as always, to Fernando, the producer, and our editors, Cassie Galpin and Kenya Scarlett. Comments, queries or suggestions of titles we should be checking out are welcome. Drop a line to Fernando on fp@monocle.com and don't forget to join us at the same time next week. Before we go, though, a little song for you. I know we already talked about the theme earlier in the programme. But I see no problems in discussing it again. Let's talk about sex from Salt-N-Pepa. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for listening. All right.